Hello, and welcome to the Smut Show,
a weekly podcast from your new internet book besties.
We discuss all things spicy books and mix in a little bit of motherhood, life, self-care, and everything in between.
So sit back,
grab a beverage,
and let's chat.
Hello, and welcome to the Smut Show. I'm Neely.
And I'm Rachel, and today we, okay, I probably should have clarified this before we got on the podcast, but it's Lauren Oakey. Is that how you say your last name? Okay, yeah. I was like, let me just make sure that I'm saying this correctly before we just continue.
Yeah.
All right, we have Lauren Oakey on the podcast with us today. She's the author of Hard Fought and Thoroughly Modern Love Stories. Her debut novel, The Best Worst Thing, publishing from Avon Books, is out today.
Yes.
As of recording. No. I mean, as of airing. That's what I meant.
I've been in a small coma, and it's out.
Yes. Yeah. As you're listening to this, it is out today.
Okay. It's out now.
Yeah.
I'm in two places at once.
Yeah. Because I can say it as of airing. I am in Positano, Italy.
Yeah. And Neely's in Italy right now for everybody listening. Yeah.
Yes. And I get back tomorrow, but Rachel and I are on day two of our marathon recording to try to get ahead of things.
Yeah. So Neely can enjoy Italy.
And we've had 2 days full of technical difficulties.
It has been. It's been a ride.
Rachel, where are you in future now? Where are you right now?
In future now, I'm...
On October 14th.
Yeah, October 14th, I'm probably at home. Let's be honest. Yeah.
I'm doing something glamorous. I'm like, I'm probably in a small Barnes and Noble.
Let me see. Maybe future me, I'm sitting at a coffee shop. Maybe I'm actually writing like I'm supposed to be doing. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm doing any of the work things that I should be doing. Maybe I'm reading a good book. I don't know.
Guys,
I'm excited for future me.
Who knows? I mean.
Anything can happen.
Anything could happen.
Guys.
Did you ever watch, I know it's like more off topic, did you ever watch The Mindy Project?
No.
No. I didn't. I'm so sorry. I know we're starting off with disappointing you. I'm so sorry.
Next year, I'm going to write down my joke and we'll do it next year.
Okay, perfect. We'll come back to this. We'll watch it in the meantime, okay? okay, Neely, do you want to start us off on our ones and five stars?
Yes. Okay, so
I can't wait.
My one star... Gosh, where to even begin? I feel like this is like a trend. I feel like every time we record, I'm like, I have a lot of one stars. Okay. One of my one stars is that as of recording, our kids have early release and get out of school in 2 hours. And I'm like, I've not even had time.
I'd really like us to stop doing that.
So, I mean, you say this as if your kids aren't going to explore today.
But, yeah, I am going to pick them up early, but not as early as you.
But I have to pick my kids up at 1:10, and then we have tumbling today, and I take Charlotte's friend to tumbling. So then I have to go at 2:30 once Andrew's home and get her from Explore. So I'm like, I'm just like running with my head cut off. And I'm tired. I was telling them before recording, Charlotte woke me up at 3:33 this morning to tell me that she couldn't sneeze.
What is 3:33 angel number mean? I'm going to look it up for you.
What does it mean?
It means divine guidance, support from spiritual masters, and encouragement for growth, creativity, and a positive future.
Great.
Sounds like you're going to have a great day.
Yeah.
Yeah, for us all, I'm on coffee number 3 and feel like I could collapse from exhaustion, but we're here and we're doing
it.
And my 5-star is that this morning the weather was so good, I could have cried. It was... Yesterday afternoon, so Lauren, we both live in Dallas, Texas, and just a mere 3 days ago, it was 105 degrees, and this morning it was like 65 degrees, and I was like, nice. I needed this for my soul.
Yes.
It is wild to me, and Rachel and I have talked about this. If you're an OG listener, you know how dependent my mood is on the weather. And if
we always talk about like in Texas, we have seasonal depression in the summer.
Yeah. I don't like when it's 100 degrees outside.
Yeah.
It is.
What is your perfect day
of weather? Oh, it's like Miss Congeniality.
I was going to say,
It's not too hot. It's not too cold. And all you need is a light jacket. But truly my perfect weather is when you can wear shorts, but you need like a sweatshirt.
Have you tried Los Angeles?
Like, I need shorts and a sweatshirt. And
I'm like, not to brag.
But she's in shorts and a sweatshirt as we speak.
She's literally in shorts and a sweatshirt.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I'll be able to wear it. The problem is my shorts and a sweatshirt weather is probably like around Christmas time.
Oh no. That's like Liam's in shorts and a sweatshirt. Like, he won't wear pants. I mean,
I will still be hot in January, unfortunately.
My 5-star is just that even looking at the forecast, it doesn't look like it's really, knock on wood, getting above 85 again for the foreseeable future. And I am just so happy. I'm ready for like the cold weather foods. I'm ready for
soup season.
Well, we started soup season when football started because I don't think shit. But yeah. Because we've always, during football season and kind of like into the winter months, we do Sunday night soup and grilled cheese is like our dinner.
Yeah.
For me and Andrew, my kids won't eat either, but because they're ridiculous, but we do it. And I'm just ready. I'm ready. There you go. I love a crisp morning.
Yeah.
Very few things make me happier. What about you, Rach?
My 1-star, I think, hold on. I feel like I had a 1-star before we started recording and now I can't remember what it is. But my 5-star is that I talked about this yesterday, but I am very excited about it. I get a weekend, not completely to myself. My older daughter and my husband are going on a camp out this weekend.
My younger child and my husband are going on the same camp out
this weekend. So then I know it's like unintentionally doing the same thing. We did not know this until we talked about it yesterday. But I'm excited to have some time with my youngest. And then I'm also excited because my mom was like, well, I feel kind of bad that she doesn't get to go on a camp out, even though she's going
she's spending the night out one night.
So he's spending the night.
This is the best.
I brought that up to Andrew. I was like, oh, maybe Liam would want to do like a sleepover with my dad and stepmom. And he's like, no, like you should have time with them. I mean, I will get almost all day Saturday to myself.
Yeah.
I went to a birthday party and his friend whose birthday party it is, the mom was like, I can take him and bring him home because they just live a couple doors down.
Yeah, like, thank you.
And I'm like, great. Right, I'm going to have like a good 5 hours on Saturday to myself. Yeah. And it's the best part of, like, I'll be with him in the morning and then he'll leave at like 10:30 and I'll come home at like 10:30. And I'm like, okay.
You've got a good chunk. And she was like, I want to do something special with just her. And I was like, that's great. And then I remembered that I had one of my best friends turned 37 a couple of weeks ago. And so we're having her birthday party this weekend. And we're doing a Moomoo's and Mahjong party, which
I love it. After years of bitching and saying you would never play Mahjong, you're now a Mahjong person.
Listen, I wouldn't call myself a Mahjong person, but I am good at it.
You're not a Mahjong person.
It's still fun.
It is fun. I will admit it.
Yeah.
I just got mad about how suburban white women were taking over the game and I was annoyed about it. So I threw my little fit about it and now I'm a suburban white woman and I'm playing the game. Okay. So here we are. And so we're doing Moomoo's and Mahjong and I will be mad if I don't win at least one game, but it's going to be fun. And then I get the night to myself. I was like, I feel like it's going to be very weird.
Are you going to clean your room first? That's like my favorite.
Oh, wait. And like make the bed.
I just take all the trash and put it in the hallway. And then
it doesn't have to go all the way out.
I have alone time this weekend and our housekeepers come tomorrow.
Nice.
So my house.
I don't either. I'm the housekeeper.
So our housekeepers come tomorrow.
And usually it's my husband's the housekeeper, but here we are. Perfectly
clean. And I'm going to order such a girl dinner for myself.
I know. I'm kind of excited to, like, I get to pick any dinner I want. I'm very excited. Okay, Lauren, what about you? 1s and 5s.
We briefed on this, but okay, in the hours last night in which I should have been sleeping, like literally between the hours of 1 a.m. and 5 a.m., I managed to misplace both my top and bottom retainer and break my glasses.
So did this all happen at the same time really is what I'm wondering.
Expensive night on the town for me. Around like 1, I was like, I'm hungry. I'm going to make a peanut butter and jelly. And it was like the most expensive. It's like, I was like essentially in a small car accident. Yeah. So, well, not really. I mean, like in terms of like, I will have $1,000 fewer dollars. Yeah. Like, because I chose to like go to McDonald's for an ice cream cone is how it feels. Yeah. And so that is, I guess, not, I'm an extremely busy person, but my side quest today is going to be like orthodontia and preparing my glasses.
Gotta be, and my the hard thing is as soon as you go, you will find it. Like the retainer will go get new one.
Which is good. It's good to have a backup, but still. Yeah. And then my daughter has dentist at 3:30. So my day is like also compressed. And then we're getting ready for school today. And she's like, Mom, do you get a prize when you go to the dentist? And I was like, actually, no.
Why should we skip that?
Why not? Yeah. Like,
anyway, so I just feel like they could give to us. You know what I mean? Like, they could do like a little under eye mask situation. They could do
the lip mask after they like dry you out.
Yes.
Genius. I love that.
Branded lip balm. So we do get that.
I get sunglasses that I don't want. Oh, like branded sunglasses. I'm like, I don't want these.
That's the dentist. My kids love
them. So you can save them.
I'll send them to you.
They love, like, at our neighborhood Fourth of July parade, when businesses like throw out sunglasses with like their business name on, that they're so happy. Like, nobody loves branded sunglasses like my children love branded
sunglasses.
It's good to have passions. So so I think my one is whatever I did when I should have been sleeping and I'm tired. And my five star is like more serious, and it's like, and I've been talking to some friends about that, is like, okay, my book comes out in today / 2.5 weeks. Yeah. And I just really expected to be like really anxious and full of fear and nervous and all of that stuff. And I definitely was in like August. So I was like, oh, it's just going to be this way forever. Mm-hmm. But it like passed. Like, I went through this sort of like anticipatory, like, okay, like we are shifting to the part where I'm no longer in control, like of the process. And I was like, and I'm just going to feel ill, like indefinitely. Mm-hmm. But around like Labor Day weekend, whenever like, and it kind of aligned with like my cycle. And so I was like, okay, I don't know. I couldn't tell whether it was like, am I crashing out long-term or am I like having this kind of like amplified crash out?
Yeah.
But then all of it passed. And then I was like, okay, it's going to happen again with like in 28 days. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's going to be repeat and worse, but it didn't. Cause it's like, like I had all these big feelings, and I like talked to friends, and I talked to my husband, and I talked to my therapist, and I like got back on the spin, but you know, but it's like, oh, I did this stuff, and now I'm just like, I mean, like, whatever, we'll see how Lauren in the future is doing in whatever 20 days or 19 days. But right now I'm just like, you did your best. Like, go have some fun. Like, this is it. This is the thing you wanted since you were a little girl, like do it. And it feels, I'm like an anxious person. So I'm just like, I did a lot over the past year. Like, I got back in therapy. Like, I straightened up some routines that weren't working. Like, I like worked on some stuff, like feeding myself regularly, even when I'm not hungry. Like, there were things that I did like to support future me and the people in this house, like who rely on me, who don't care, like that mommy wrote a book. Right.
Yeah.
Like, and I did them. And it's like, oh, it's paying off. Like, I am more well than I expected. And it's just like making this whole experience so much.
It's like, thank you, Past Lauren.
Yeah. Like, thank you. Kudos. Or like, also like, thank you, Past Lauren's husband, for being like, hey, you've got to get your shit together, because like, we're not going to fall apart in this house because your dream came true, which is like often what happens at like the gates of success. So I'm just like, I just feel good, you know, which is not to say that I'm not being like a nut, because I am, but I am being a fraction of the nut that I think I would have been had I not like put in some work. So five stars for me.
Five stars for you, for sure. Snaps for you. I think it's really, I think that's such a good perspective. I think it's really difficult to do that. And it does take the, you know, months of work leading up to it for that to be something that happens. I also think we don't talk enough about how much a woman's cycle impacts our, I coming from the, like in a creative field, it really impacts the creativity, but I think also just like the productivity and like what we expect from women to be constantly on when like, that's not how our bodies work.
We're essentially moons. We are moons.
We are. I'm like, you don't like you. We can't always be a full moon. That's just not going to happen.
Can you, like, for a second, just talk about how hard women have it?
It's hard.
Like, we have to do all the things, and then you throw, like, I am pretty sure I'm starting perimenopause. I don't know. Maybe not. Yeah. But, like, why is it always something?
Always.
Right? Like, it's always something. It's either, like, your period or your PMSing or trying to get pregnant or going through infertility, which we're going to get to. Or then it's like, oh, JK, now you're just, like, closing up shop. And I'm like...
Yeah. I've got some book recs for you from my book club, who they said that they've recently read. I don't know what they are off the top of my head, so I'll come back to me.
Let's hear it.
And then the future episode. But I have, there's several women in my book club that have read these, like, perimenopause.
I don't want to read it.
Everyone's reading, like, All Fours. It's like,
I don't want to read it. I want to be
surprised. Well, we read other stuff too, but that is something that it was helpful.
It was just making me sad.
Okay, sorry. Okay. Reroute. What are we reading, Neely, or watching?
I'm not, but I am in my seasonal rewatch of Gilmore Girls because basic fall. But I'm doing it different this time. Instead of watching the whole show, I'm just watching episodes I like.
I love that.
That is so, what a gift to yourself.
Yeah.
I'm just like, why am I going to watch episodes that I don't want to watch? Life is short. So
life is short.
Anyway, it's funny though. Every time I watch Gilmore Girls, I feel like my opinions drastically change on like the right guy for her, all of them. My conclusion so far is that as much as I love Jess, I don't think Jess was right for her. I think adult Jess was way too good for her. I think Jess post high school was too good for Rory. And Jess in high school was like, you know, the guy that everyone dates in high school that's like kind of a fuck up. So, but then he like really surpassed her on his like goodness. On his
like redemption arc.
Yeah. And also, like, can we talk about the fact that Rory has just kind of like always been a cheater and like been in, like, she cheated on Dean with Jess. She. Mm-hmm. Cheated on, or Dean cheated on his wife with her.
Yeah.
And then when in the back, like the, what is it, year in the life?
Yeah.
Logan is fully engaged to somebody and she's still
single. Yes.
And I'm like, like, you're not good. And she's
growing up is realizing that Rory Gilmore is the villain.
She's the villain in that story. Like, to be honest, Lorelai is an enabler of the villain arc. And I'm like watching this show and I'm like, justice for Emily, because you know what? They're so fucking ungrateful to her. Like,
I love Emily Gilmore. I also think my mother and Emily Gilmore.
I want a sideshow where Emily takes me to Paris. I'm like, I will go. That if none Emily of you want to hang out with her, I will go first class to Paris with Emily and tell you whatever she says.
Yeah. In the year in the life, Emily Gilmore has the best arc of anybody when she's just like, fuck this shit. I'm moving to Nantucket. I hate everybody.
Yes.
The DIR is stupid. And I'm like, Emily Gilmore is my favorite animal. Like, I just watched the episode where she, like, rips apart Logan's mom at that DIR event.
Yes.
And calls her, like, a stupid hussy. And I'm like, this is the how this isn't ranked as one of the greatest scenes in television history is beyond me. Because she delivered that so well. And I, as a girl who ran in Dirty Dancing like most weekends in high school, I mean, Kelly Bishop.
Yeah. Just,
anyway, she's an
icon. She is. Lauren, are you reading and or watching anything?
So I'm not watching. Okay. Oh, okay. My media consumption is like very disappointing because I mostly have to consume media that I created right now because I'm working on 3 books.
Oof.
So it's like, which is like so fun, but it's like, oh, like that's how the
are you doing this simultaneously? You're working on, like, are you writing 3 at a time? Or are you just in different parts of the process?
Hopefully I don't have to redact this. I have another book coming out next summer. So it's supposed to be announced. Like,
am I allowed to say that? October 1. I don't know.
I mean, if you Googled it, you would find it.
Okay,
but like, it hasn't been announced yet.
It's Googleable.
So I think that's happening like imminently, like this week it's being like officially announced, but that's coming out in June. And then I am working on a manuscript for my 3rd book, Because like this stuff happens like years in advance. So normally I'd be like working on one thing and then like living a normal life. But now I'm like, oh, when I'm not working on one thing, it's like, it's publicity or it's like past pages coming through or whatever. So there seems to be like 4 to 9 hours per book a day of stuff to do. And so I'm like, you know, and like the issue with creating is that like you can always do a little more and it's very hard for me to like stop away. So TV has been limited because I'm mostly working at night.
Yes.
But my husband and I started watching the new season of Upload, which is, have you guys watched it? It's just like so silly. And you know when the show is like really dumb, but written by super smart people?
Yes.
So you can like see the hand of like the subversion or whatever. So it's sort of like that where it's, I mean, it's Greg Daniels, who's The Office, but it's just.
Is it on?
I think it's on Amazon Prime. I don't know. I'm not the remote person. I think
someone who's watching is on a streaming service at this point.
Yes, it is on Amazon.
Yes. It is very, very funny. It's like speculative. Like basically it's like there's like this AI world where you go after you die and like this Robbie Amell, who's like gorgeous and who's always my fan cast for Gabe in my book or whatever, it dies. And then he's there and he like falls in love with his handler, who's like a real person who like VRs in. And it's just like very, very funny because they take the plot very seriously, but it's also like, it's very glib. It makes fun of death. Like the whole world where they live is sponsored by a business called like Nokia Taco Bell. And like, right. And they like, so all the product placement is like kind of this big joke. So it has, like, it has the parts.
That's hilarious.
And it's like, it has romance, it's satire, it's kind of like The Good Place, like meets Parks and Rec, whatever. It's very, very silly. Like they play with death. Like it's poignant. It's just like a really good time. And it's funny and it's nice. Like I think especially right now where I'm like, I'm busy to watch something that's like, just like so fun. And like the actors and actresses in it, like are just so committed to the bit.
I'm so excited about this.
I'm sending it to my husband because he works in tech and I'm like, I feel like he would really enjoy this.
It's funny. It's funny. Okay, it's very,
Silicon Valley.
Yes.
Is it like similar type humor to Silicon Valley? Because he loved that. I'm trying to think of comedy.
It has some of it. I would say it's like a little campier but they're both like redonkulous. If like, because, you know what I mean? And like, they're both in on the joke. Like, you know.
Yeah. So Andrew worked in Silicon Valley. He worked at Google. And so like when that show came out, he was like, we would sit there and he was like, this is like exactly what it's like.
That's how I feel watching Abbott Elementary.
Yeah. Like it's
I'm like,
it's,
this is real.
I mean, but truly, like, I feel like when speaking of TV shows, the trailer for the next season of Nobody Wants This came out today.
Ooh, okay. I haven't seen it yet.
I saw like a blip of it during my,
let me tell you how, like, to me, that show is perfect. I had,
it's so good.
The season ended and I was like, they could have done nothing to make this better. That like, I am so obsessed with every character on that show.
Yeah.
There's one character I don't like. It's so, and because I know none of my husband's family listens to this, his parents are Andrew's parents. Like, that is what Andrew's parents are.
That's funny.
And like
they're going to tune in for this one as a small guest. We got to a minute. We got to 23:23.
Yeah.
Like,
we're like, we heard.
Don't worry. I don't even think they know I have a podcast, but if you're listening, hi.
Hi. Thanks for being here.
okay. But y'all know that the show, and Rachel, I might've said this to you. So it's the girl who like created it. It's based on her husband and her and like their marriage.
Yes.
Also like when she went to his family and was like, you know, I want to do this. Like, are y'all okay with it? They were like, just don't make us look poor.
Like my favorite. That's hilarious.
The whole thing. It's just, if people are listening and you haven't watched Nobody Wants This, like, just go watch it.
Go watch it.
It's like a hug in TV show form. And that's the only way I can explain it. You know what, Rachel? Maybe that's what I'll watch this weekend, which is
now. Unsure what Neely's going to watch this weekend. She'll have to report back.
I have so much freedom to watch something I want to watch that I, like, don't even know where to start.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I did read a book recently. Yay me.
Yes.
We were talking yesterday and I realized I had forgotten because I don't keep track of my books anymore. And so I forget frequently, like, what I have read, and I love not tracking my books. I actually think I might start tracking it in, oh, that's another one of my five stars, is I started a non-screen hobby of a sketchbook / junk journal. And so maybe I'll start keeping track in my little junk sketchbook thing. Because it is kind of hard. I'm like, what have I read? I don't remember. But we were talking yesterday and Neely reminded me that I had just read, oh, and now I'm going to forget which one it is, but it's the newest Elsie Silver, which is Wild Card, maybe.
Oh, how was it?
Wild Card. Elsie Silver can do no wrong, in my opinion.
I just haven't read it yet.
She is phenomenal and deserves all of the success that has come her way. Because this book was so good. I loved it. It's an ex-boyfriend's dad. And I was really like, how are they gonna, like, I don't know how I'm gonna feel about this. That's not a trope that I usually go to, but I'm like, really, if I trust Elsie, okay, I trust her to do this well. And she did. It was so good. And it was, I think the difference was the ex-boyfriend's dad was 40. So he was young. He wasn't.
Give me the whole, I want the whole family tree now.
Okay.
Ex-boyfriend
was 24. And so.
Okay. So high school dad.
He had gotten, this girl pregnant in high school, didn't know. And so he didn't even know he had a son until.
That's a hot workaround.
Yes. Yeah, until good. Later. And so basically they have this like meet cute that happens. The male main character and the female main character have this meet cute that happens, exchange phone numbers. And he doesn't know
that he's a dad yet.
He has literally just found out. Like, they're at the airport. He has just come. He's coming back from meeting his son for the first time, who is a man who's 23, 24 at the time, whatever.
Okay.
And so he's kind of like in his, they meet at the airport. He's kind of in his feels. Their flight gets delayed. They end up spending this whole night together at the airport, just like as you do, killing time at the airport. And so they exchange numbers at the end. He texts her a couple of times. She never responds. And so he's like, okay, I guess.
Is it dual POV?
It is dual POV.
How do you have all this intel on what he wants?
Listen.
Like, there can only be one way, dig that.
I've got so much. Dual POV.
It's like,
and then,
you're telling me the story. I'm like, how do you know about, with the inner workings of his brain? What possible narrative choice?
Yeah, I
have been going back and forth between either dual POV or not, and first person and third person, and I'm like, I don't even know who I am anymore.
Yeah, I know, you're going all over the place. I think it's really interesting though. So then she goes and she's like a traveling yoga instructor. She goes and she's ends up
That's being hot.
Yeah, it's totally. And she goes, but she's like a curvy yoga instructor, which I love even more. And so she goes, she's doing yoga for like I'm hired for this. NHL team. And so she's doing yoga and then she ends up, the son ends up like asking her on a date several times. She finally goes, very casual. Then she's at his birthday party, the son's birthday party, and the dad shows up.
The son involvement is coming later too.
It's after.
So they have not dated.
Before,
this is,
like, when,
this is like good plotting.
I was like, I loved
this is
it.
Like,
I thought
yeah.
it was so
like,
good.
This is okay, like a real world.
Yes,
I'm gonna read it on my.
This is like okay, a real okay. I'm world. Not gonna give you any more, but that's okay. where I'll stop. But
and then
it
it's
was,
hot.
And then it's hot. It was phenomenal. Yeah. I loved it. The side characters are great. The small town that I love reading is so fun. And yeah, he's like broody and grumpy and like pissy, and he's just like so good. So he flies planes. He's an aerial firefighter.
I'm sorry, you just intermixed two things I didn't know I needed, which is fireman and pilot.
We need to wrap now.
Yeah, yeah. So if we need to get off, y'all can go start it right now. It was
fireman and a pilot, guys.
Yeah, yeah. I know. And a man who's 40, which Neely and I can relate to. Lauren, I don't know how old you are.
I'm 37. And okay. In my book, Logan is 39. And I remember I wrote the book when I just turned 34. And I was like writing him. And I was like, what is the oldest I can possibly make him where I would like be able to understand his position?
Yes, because
and then I'm going to make him 2 years older than that. And so I was like 39. And now I'm like almost his age, like, and the book's about to come out. Like, it just comes at you fast.
But yes.
Yeah, I mean, increasingly pleased to find that my taste in men, and like, obviously, like every year my husband gets older, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
Because like, I'm older. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want the version of him that I picked. I want this one. You know? So, I want the one like 10 years from now.
Yeah, I saw a video of Joshua Jackson and Katie Holmes at the Dawson's Creek reunion the other night. And if you know, you know. Listen, my AIM screen name was Dawes Creek 14. Okay, I am a Dawson's Creek. I don't apologize for pasty.
No, this tracks to me.
I have loved Joshua Jackson since Mighty Ducks, then in Dawson's Creek. And that man just gets hotter and hotter and hotter.
The little bit of the age. Brian has started getting some gray in his beard. He just turned 39,
he looks so and he's exciting. Like, "I know."
"You got some gray in your beard."
I know. Joshua Jackson in his 40s. I'm like, because I watched The Affair on Showtime, which is a great show if you've never watched it. But it's like very, it's like you could not handle it, Rachel. But it's a very good show. But
she knows.
Was hot then, and that was like the 2014-ish. And I'm like, do you just like? Are you just
he's
always
like a Clooney? I think he's Clooney.
Yeah.
But you know who else is too? Is Paul Rudd, which we all know. Paul Rudd drinks the blood of children.
Well, because he's like finally starting to age. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Also, Andrew and I watched Clueless recently, and I'm like, I'm not into Paul Rudd and Clueless. Paul Rudd and Clueless was not that cute. But
he's a little passive for me.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, not the vibe in Clueless. Like, I'm more attracted to the skater guy, like stoner guy in Clueless, which like honestly tracks for high school me. So
yeah, there you go.
All right, should we get into the interview?
Let's do it. Okay, Lauren, we always start with what's your villain?
Warm up. We're ready.
So, yeah, there we go. I know we're yappers. What is your villain origin story? So just how you can take this however you want. Honestly, you can start at birth if you feel like it. But how'd you get to where you are today?
Well. There's like the 6-hour version.
Yeah.
The short version. And do you mean like creatively, vibe-wise?
Any way you want to think.
Yeah.
Just like, why is my office purple? There's like, and it's all sort of interrelated.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Pick the vibe. It's a choose your own adventure.
We'll start with the office because I think that gives a lot of information. The office is purple because this is
light purple, like a lilac. Yeah.
Right. I've got like, can you see it? I've got this cool.
No, yeah, this cute little couch.
That attracts me. So maybe we'll get that. See that cool table. A lot of
natural light.
Cute.
Too.
So it is a cool little
tiger
space.
Rug.
There's a neon. We can't see it. Pusha's thing did hand directions. Everyone's going to get nauseous. This is like Blair Witch Project.
I have vertigo at this point.
Yeah.
So anyway, the reason I think the office is a good place to start is because I met my husband when I was 19. So my husband and I met at college in NYU. And so before I had met him, I was like, I would pass like the big anthropology windows in the Flatiron and be like, I'm going to have the girliest apartment, like just the most room. And then then you meet this guy who's tall, who only wants to have sex with you. And like, you don't throw them back. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you keep them. When they only want to have sex with you, you keep them.
Yeah, that's a huge component. Yeah.
And so
he and I are, you know, together forever. And so when we moved into this house, when I was 33 or something, it was kind of my first opportunity to make a space that was only mine. So it is my girly room. So it is purple. There's a neon sign in here. Like I have a little closet over here and I keep all of my nice stuff. So it's like handbags and date night clothes and jewelry and stuff are in here. And then like workout stuff is in my room. So it's like my bachelorette. It's my she shed.
I love that.
It's also where I create. So it's a place that like I'm a messy person and I'm able to keep this space clean and my books are in here and like my manuscripts and like my crazy plot walls are in front of me. So this is a space that's only for me. And that's as someone so who met clean. Their partner.
Yeah.
As someone who met their partner really young, like it's such a special space for for me. And then creatively, I'm just like, you know, I was always a storyteller. I was not a great student growing up. I have ADHD, like in the 90s, like the plan for that was like not the same as it is now, like the acceptance of neurodivergence and like IEPs and like whatever. And so it was very much like square peg round hole is how I felt in school, and like just kind of like the constant humiliation of being like, I can't sit still, I forget to take my meds, the nurse comes to the door, they're like giving you medication, it's like, you know, I cannot, like, school's hard enough. And then there's like, there's homework. Like, I need to go make a puppet show. Like, I can't do more homework. You know what I mean? And it's like, so I was always like creating, but I was never creating the things the system wanted me to create. And so, like, the narrative I had is like, you're stupid, you're stupid, you're stupid, you're stupid. Because, like, why, you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't, I had to, like, in middle school, I had to, like, go to the assistant principal's office and they would watch me read. Cause I was at this like private school and I wasn't doing the reading. So like everyone else would play and they would like sit there and watch me read. And I was just like kind of so humiliated by my own like differentness, which is not a word, but I really want it to be. And then it's like, I don't know, at some point in high school, I'm like, wait, I don't think I'm stupid. I think there's been like some kind of misunderstanding, you know, like, and I had always been like a good writer, but it was just like, not like for schoolwork, like for making stuff up, like for writing a poem
for the stuff
for fun.
That you like, wanted to write about.
Yeah. Or like, I would like make, you know, like fake party invitations for my toys and like mess with the layout. And like, so I just kind of had this like big creative brain that knew exactly how it wanted things. But I didn't have like the butt in seat traditional study skills to like succeed. And like, luckily, like medication, good parents, time, right? It's like, okay, I'm able to kind of get my stuff together in high school, at least like to some extent. Like, I'm still underachieving, but I've got a chip on my shoulder and whatever. And things are getting done. And the schoolwork, I guess, is getting more interesting. Or I just wanted to prove people wrong. So I'm like, I'm going to study just to F you. And then I had these 20s that were like really unremarkable because I was like, you know, I graduated from college during the Great Recession. And I, like, it sounds like a really good excuse to being like, oh, like, why didn't you get an interesting job? It's a Great Recession. But the real answer is because, like, I didn't know how to take a big swing. So I would see people around me, like, even have, like, a cool job in advertising. And I would be like, oh, I want that. Like, I want to create something. And yet, like, I, like, would never do the work to make that happen for me. And I really, really felt like that for a long time. And so I had this career in hospitality. I was really interested in, like, in food, which I think is also storytelling in a way. It's all, like, production, right? Like, it's like, oh, I want to create these experiences. And I like things just so. And it's, and so I was really into that. But then, like, I started working in, like, corporate hospitality. And I was really unhappy. And then I just, like, I want a baby. You know? I was like, maybe that's why I'm on this earth. It's like, you know, and I had always been like, okay, I'll have a kid. Like, I love my husband, I'll have a kid. I'll have two kids, whatever, of course. But like, I was never like, baby, right? And also I'm like, maybe I want to be a stay-at-home mom. Like, maybe I want to have my kids and then I'll go into event planning, like whatever. And writing is just like, not even a thing that's on the radar because it's scarce and it's impossible. And I'm not a risk taker. And like, and big, amazing, scarce things don't happen to me. Like, I'm a regular old person, right? And I remember, like, sometimes at night, I'd be like, oh, like, you probably have a book in you, and it's so sad or never exists. And my brain's like, don't even think about it. Don't even think about it. Like, just keep whatever, doing whatever it is you're doing. Just keep making your lasagna or whatever, you know? And then I couldn't get pregnant. And that created, like, a really big problem for me because that was the plan. Like, that was what I was going to do from 27 to 32 is be a mom. And then, and I was going to punt on defining what personal success looked like for me by building a family. Or I was going to like intermingle the two and like almost use motherhood like armor. Like, oh, I never did the big dream, right? Which was always to write a book, but I have my family and I'm so happy. So just don't ask questions about why I didn't do the big thing, you know? And then the problem is I couldn't get pregnant, you know? And so I was like 27. I wasn't even getting, I got off the pill. I didn't get a period. like, that was terrifying. Goes on for 6 months. Like, everything's fine. Everything is not fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I was like, it's not
everything
fine.
Moves
like,
so
it's not
slow.
Fine. I'm 27 years old. Like, where is my period? You know? Yeah. And then like, okay, well, like, we're just going to do this like ovulation induction thing. And, like, I don't respond to that because my ovaries are like that of an 8-year-old girl. Like, they're completely shut down. Like, things are not working. And like, we don't know if it's PCOS or this other thing with your like hypothalamus. I'm like, my hypothalamus, like, I should just roll over and get pregnant. Like, I'm so young, you know what I mean? And, so the injections don't work. So like, you need more. So I'm like 27 years old and they're like, you're going to do IVF. And I was like, but that's for old people. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. Like, just, I don't know. I want like Clomid. Like, give me the $5 pill.
You
and
don't.
I want twins.
Listen, I did Clomid for many, 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 many months. And the fact that Andrew's still married to me is a straight up miracle.
Makes you crazy.
Yeah, it makes you so crazy.
I remember my fertility doctor, she called it the divorce drug. I've never... felt less.
That is like saying something.
Yeah.
And this was after the fact when I was like, hey, this is making me insane. She's like, yeah, it can cause some mood swings. Some people joke and call it the divorce drug. And I'm like, there was
a bonds to your estrogen receptors, right?
I think so. There's a point where I was screaming at Andrew. Then I started crying and I'm like, I can hear myself. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Yeah.
Like, I was
and that's the worst feeling.
That shit.
The hormonal rage is really terrifying.
It is. Yeah.
Like, I think that's why when Charlotte is like she is sometimes, I don't lose my shit with her because I'm like, listen, I know, like, I will say to her, like, I know that you don't know why you're this upset.
Yeah.
Like, I relate to you.
Yeah. So. Yeah. To those big feelings. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. So anyway, nothing works. I do IVF. Like, the compress, like, in the interest of time, I do a lot of IVF. My IVF results, like, in healthy embryos, like, screened or whatever, healthy, like, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just, like, for the, in the interest of using one word. Like, the embryos they wish to transfer that should result in, like, a good live birth.
Yeah.
I miscarry them twice. And nobody ever looks inside my body because I had an ovulation problem. Right. So I came in with this one problem. So they're treating anovulation. And so I, as a person who goes on Reddit, is like, if I have an ovulation problem, why am I not staying pregnant? And they're like, well, sometimes miscarriages can't be explained. And I was like, okay, but actually, no. Like,
like,
you should explain this one because it was $30,000. So, like, I want you to.
So I need you to explain this one. Yeah.
And, like, maybe at the end of the answer, it is, we can't explain it. Like, sometimes, even when the chromosomes are set and, like, even whatever, sometimes, like, human reproduction is not that great. Like, things do happen.
Yeah.
But I felt like it was not good enough. And I felt really gaslit by the medical community that, like, they didn't have this sense of alarm of me being, like, 127.
Mm-hmm.
I got pregnant with an embryo. I was on hormonal support. Like, that baby should have been born. Like, even if there are circumstances under which, like, bad shit happens, like, it was a red flag to me. And I felt crazy that it was not a red flag to my to my team.
Yeah.
And then it happened again.
Yeah.
So we did it again. All cash. Transfer another healthy embryo. In a week, I'm like, I'm bleeding again.
Yeah.
And they're still like, okay, this is strange. They still don't look inside my body after two. And 27 years old, two in a row, September and February. It's like 8 or 9 years ago. So I go to a new doctor. And they do the saline ultrasound, which is like a $5 procedure that takes like 6 seconds. And she's like, you have a uterine septum. You have a birth defect in your uterus. So the embryos have been implanting on a non-vascular part of your uterus. And they run out of nutrients and blood flow and oxygen. And that's it. Like, the pregnancy ends. I'm like, oh, well, now I have PTSD and no money. And I'm crazy because I've had two like miscarriages. So my hormones are like out of whack.
Crazy.
Like, I've lost control of my career where I'm not happy. I don't recognize my body. And I'm still like years away from motherhood. And no refunds.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
the society talk about that more because infertility and I mean, going through any sort of fertility treatment is insanely expensive.
Mm-hmm. It's, and it is such a privilege. Like, and mm-hmm. and in the book, I try to make space for that, where it's like, it is even a privilege to fail at IVF, like, which is so disappointing. But yeah, like it is insanely expensive, and it puts it, if you were fortunate enough to afford it, like it puts an insane amount of stress mm-hmm. on your family anyway. Like, unless mm-hmm. you're filthy rich, it's huge, and you feel crazy. Like mm-hmm. you feel crazy handing over money to people who are like not paying attention. Right. You know what I mean? Like, and it's like you're at the DMV and you're like, this is something I really tried to write for Nicole, is being like, I'm just trying to do the thing that you guys keep telling me I need to do.
Yes.
Which is be a mom. And then you're acting like a crazy person because, like, I find a mistake on my treatment plan and I call and I'm upset. And you're like, oh, good catch. Thank you. Like, and I'm like, no, I want, you know what I mean? Like I want you
I
to
shouldn't
act
have had to catch it.
Doctors?
I switched doctors like a bazillion times. And honestly, like, they were lovely. But, like, at the end of the day, I felt really, really gaslit because, like, I was a whack-a-mole case. And mm-hmm. I think it's, like, it's a lot. Like, and a 28-year-old not getting pregnant is, like, not good for your fertility treatment. Like, stats, and stats are how they make money. And, like, it's a business. You know what I mean? And it's, like, so we try to repair this thing in my body. We try 3 times. And I do 2 more transfers, 2 more rounds of IVF. And, like, I can't get pregnant. Like now I'm not even miscarrying, like something, mm-hmm. like there's problems with the surgery. Like the uterus is like, it's worse than it was before. Da, 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 da. And so I'm 30 and my doctor's like, hey, I think you need surrogate. And so I was like, cool. Let's see. And I kind of knew it was coming and I had kind of mm-hmm. been asking for several years to being like, hey, I'm tired of paying for this IVF and putting my body through this, knowing that mm-hmm. like it's a shot in the dark. Like, don't mm-hmm. you think we should be doing this in a place where like babies are carried to term and they're like, mm-hmm. and before, you know, surrogacy is, I think it's a little like more popular now. 10 years ago, like, I mean, you probably still do, like, it's like months of medical and psychological, mm-hmm. like psychiatric screenings and whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, you need like, you know, like notarized documents that are like, you can't carry a child. And I think, mm-hmm. yeah. like, I think the celebrityfication of surrogacy has made that more confusing because there's no transparency in the process. But I can say from experience that my process was that, like, I had to move mountains mm-hmm. as a non-famous person to get, like, to get, you know, healthcare to sign off on this procedure. And I was mm-hmm. lucky enough to meet, through a friend of a friend, it's my friend's college roommate, who ended up carrying my child. I didn't go through an agency. Mm-hmm. Like, we did everything, like, with lawyers, everything above the book or whatever. I just, like, but there is a personal connection, and I went and I met her, and I just remember thinking, and Nicole thinks this in this book, and I was like, this woman's going to change my life. We met in a bathroom. We were like going to lunch, but then I looked up from the mirror washing my hands and it was her. And we're like, oh no, like we can't meet in a bathroom. But it was like exactly what I needed because I was like, oh, she's human. I'm human. And I had been so scared that like she was going to not like me. Mm. Like I was going to say something weird and she's going to be like, well, I don't want to give her a baby. And I felt so like vulnerable because most mm-hmm. people just get to have sex and then they get to have a baby. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I have to go to lunch with someone and they have to decide whether I deserve this. Mm-hmm. And it was like, after going through what I went through, and it was like such a like kind of like you're kind of like vomiting through your mouth. Like, you know, it's like the amount of pressure I felt. And she was lovely. And I was like, this is going to solve all my problems. And it didn't work the first time. And it didn't work the second time. And then they told us to stop and we're like, no, we're going to do one more because it's in the contract, whatever. At this point, you know, we're just lighting everything, our savings on fire. Like we're going to finish this up. And the third one is my daughter. Mm. So that's how I got my daughter. And then I was like, okay, and then I met the baby and it's going to fix everything. And then they put my daughter in my arms and I was like the exact same person. It's like, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, like all of the shit that I just went through that I thought would be like, erased. It wasn't erased. It compressed, mm-hmm. but it's like still in me. And so mm-hmm. the book I wrote is like, I needed to make something with that experience. And I needed like and I needed it to be fun. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the other thing too. It's like, oh, like, how can I take this thing that, like, I know women in their 30s are talking about, and that I have this, like, hyper-specific experience with, and make it, like, hot? You know what I mean? Like, and like, make this, like, silver lining. And also, like, because, and my husband is, like, a wonderful person, and he would never do the things to me that Gabe did in this book, but there is a part of me that's like, but what if he, like, yeah. This was a secret that was in my body, and, like, what if, what would it look like to re-enter the marketplace knowing you couldn't have children? And, like, how difficult would it be to believe it when a partner's like, I don't care. Like, how difficult would it be to believe that? Like, in a standard relationship. And so the story ends up being like an exploration of this trauma I have, but also like this kind of like creative exercise of being like, how would I trust my body again? Like, after my partner and my body had betrayed me, and like, and what is like, what kind of man or partner or love or whatever could change me, you know? And that is the story. So that's my villain origin story.
So great.
My friend, one of my best friends and I both went through IVF, and we didn't know each other obviously like till we had kids, because we met through a program called MOPS, like Moms Preschoolers. And I was pregnant with my second, and she had two. Anyway, her IVF story is like way more crazy than mine. But we talk a lot about how even like, and it's so hard to explain this to people who haven't gone in through infertility, but people, I think, have this assumption that once you have a baby, whatever way it comes, be it adoption or surrogacy, or you do get pregnant, that it doesn't, that all of that stuff you went through is gone, right? Like, they think like, oh, like, but you have your baby now. And it's like, okay, but like, and I've been in therapy consistently for 18 months, and through therapy, mostly, I've realized how much trauma that was.
And that you still carry with you.
Happened in my personal life during it, not with my husband, but my sister-in-law got pregnant while we were going through infertility. And even when she got pregnant, like, I couldn't put into words that I wasn't not happy for her. I was sad for me. Right. And like, we got married first. We should have had the first grandchild. Like, it felt at the time, like, I can remember, and I've told this story before, that I'm very close with my sister-in-law, and my sister-in-law and brother-in-law didn't even tell us. Like, my brother-in-law called my husband at work and was like, you have to tell Neely. And he walked in the door that night, and I looked at him and I was like, Crystal's pregnant. Like, I just,
it's
like,
it's not fun. And you know, like, people act like it's like telling you that someone died. Like, when you can't get pregnant and they have to tell you that news.
I have friends who were very careful with their words and very, and it's, there's not, like, I try to remind people, I'm like, there's not a good way to do this.
No, there's not.
Like, there's not a way that's going to make it hurt less.
Yeah. Cause I have this, I mean, I'm sure both of you have the same thing where you have these vivid memories that stick out in your head of like specific people that you've heard. Memories. Yeah.
And you just feel.
Because some people removed my heart from my body.
Yeah.
And then it's like the jealousy and then the shame of being like, you can't even go to your husband's friend from high school's wife's baby shower. And I'm like, because I've been married for 7 years and I have no money and I hate my body. And she's like barefoot and pregnant. And it's like, I don't want to compare myself to these people, but it's like, you have, because this stuff makes you crazy. And this is in the book too, which is like
crazy.
And you're like obsessed with getting pregnant. And you may have been like, I'll have a baby. Like, that's how you're on day one. And then by like day 100 of fertility treatment, you're like in the Facebook groups, like eating the pineapple,
going through it. So Rachel and I actually met in an infertility support group. That is how we met.
Yeah.
And then the people leave and you're still there and you're like, fuck you.
We ended up being pregnant at the same time. Liam and Lainey are like, what, just 2 months apart.
Accidentally 2 months apart. But yes.
I mean, Lainey still wasn't supposed to be born then, but
My first was born at 24 weeks, so she was born very early. So she gave me her own brand of PTSD. Right?
Like, I
was
either.
Like, we had a really hard time getting pregnant with you, and this is what you do to me.
How you reward us?
This is how you treat us.
And like, I didn't realize too until I had Liam especially, and then Charlotte, and had more friends going through it, how rare it was that, like, we had two embryos. That's all we had, and both of them worked.
Yeah.
I didn't know at the time that that is, like, insane. That's, like, an insane stat. Because I have friends who have implanted 10 embryos and cannot get pregnant. And, like, and then there's, like, a weird compounded guilt with that that I have because of – it's, like – like, all of this to say that, like, the guilt and the fear and the, like, all of the emotions don't just go away because you have said baby.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you, that never goes away. And the fact that you channeled that into something so amazing, like, when I read this book, and one of the things that I was drawn to about it is that I really, like, I'd read books that dealt with infertility, but never by somebody who had gone through it. And I think there's a big difference in, like, listen, I've read books on it that are wonderful and that portray it perfectly. And you can tell that these people talk to a million friends and they did tons of research, but there's something very different reading it from somebody who lived it. And
yeah, like, cause like, you have the whole profile to pick from. Like, yeah. Very, the little details. Yeah.
Plus, like, every woman's infertility journey is so different. I mean, look at the three of us. We have three completely different journeys with infertility. Yeah. And it's just, it's such a interesting topic to me too, because when I was going through it, there was, like, nothing out there about it, right? Like, people still in 2015, like, were not talking about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like that it's getting better. And, like, obviously you've got, like, books like yours that are coming out that are, putting words to things that women have been experiencing for so long. But it's crazy. You think nobody goes through it. Like, I felt, I remember feeling so alone
in that journey. It's not hot. And so it's it kind of, as a result, gets wiped from, I mean, motherhood in general. And, like, it's another reason why I was so pleased to write this book is I'm like, and we do see it in romance novels to some extent. And there's obvious reasons why we don't see it constantly, but I'm like, oh God, like, you don't stop wanting someone to be obsessed with you because you're a mom. Like,
yeah,
no. You know what I mean? And it's like, oh, like, to create this character who's like desperate to be a mother. And then also just, like, wants to get thrown against the wall by this guy from work. Cause I'm like, women can get in multitudes. And
I think it's confusing.
Like, have you ever been to dinner with a drunk mom?
Yeah.
Like, because she's Nicole. Like, it's like one of those things where it's like, she's like, she wants to, like, go on Target and pick out little outfits for her baby. And then she wants to go home and get railed. And, like, it's not that complicated. No, so, like, where is the rep for crazy women in their 30s? Like, where is it? So, and I think, I hope, like, hopefully, like, this is, and I think there are some books out there, but it's like, oh, like, this is just everything you talk about at brunch. Like,
yeah.
But messier. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is the stuff that, like, I'm talking about with my peers. And it gets, like, it gets removed, I think, from a lot of, like, you know what you're talking about? You're talking about, like, Elsie Silver, and you're like, oh, anything is good if it's done well. Mm-hmm. Like, well, literally. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, like, if this, the setup works, like, if the story works, then, like, let's go. Like, let's go and see. And so I think, you know, I think that's kind of the fun.
A TMI for our listeners, but maybe we just don't have a TMI. But I can remember after we had Charlotte, and, like, I was very, like, we were very much, like, even before we started trying to get pregnant, we knew we just wanted to. Like, we weren't like, oh, we, and even if Charlotte hadn't worked, I thought I was miscarrying her at one point, and that was my last embryo, and we were like, I was not going to do it again. Like, that was my, I was done. And there's something to be said, like, I feel like the whole time starting from infertility through having Charlotte, like, sex was for a purpose, right? Like, it wasn't, sex was not for enjoyment. It was sex for baby. And sex for baby is not fun sex. Like, and I don't know how to explain that to people who, like, magically get pregnant the first month of trying. Like,
no, because when you're, it's been a million months.
First month's hot, and then it's panic.
And then it's been a million months, and then you're laying there with your ass in the air trying to do anything to get pregnant.
When you're doing stuff like Clomid and a trigger shot, it's like, you have this 36-hour period to have sex. It's like, don't care if you have a migraine. Don't care if you don't feel like it and you're not in the mood, you do it. And
or, like,
it was
don't have sex the day before, like, the rules, right?
Yeah,
like,
the rules. And it's just, so when we had Charlotte and we were done, and I was like, sex can be fun again. Like, it's like, and it's like you almost become a different person because you're like, oh,
I don't think TMI. I think this is like the highlight of the episode to be like, your body belongs to you.
But people don't have these conversations because for so many years, and then it's like, I did not breastfeed, but it's like very different than if you spend like years and years, like when you get your body back, right? When you, when your body is yours again, it is just, and it's a different body. Okay. And I don't care if you did surrogacy or like, once you've gone through any amount of fertility, your body is a different body. And you know, like there are times still, and Rachel and I have talked about body image. So I will look at my body and be like, I hate this or I hate this. And it's like, it's a different body, but this body is strong and it's done a lot of cool shit.
And I think the great thing about too, like getting your body back is that for me, and I think Nayli was kind of like going this way, but for me, it was a relearning how to love my body, right? And then getting to experience that with somebody who also loved my body. You know, I was like, oh, this is like, you like this, how it is. Like you, I'm like, I think I need a breast lift. And Brian's like, no, you don't. And I'm like,
learning to love the body that let you down. Right.
Like,
And it's huge.
Yeah. It's huge.
And also
this
just
body
like,
that's failed you. And so that you feel like has failed you in so many ways where it's not also, like you have a way for it not to be failing you. You know what I mean?
I'll probably feel this too. And like, it's so much easier when you're at this point to look back and be like, I'm glad I went through that because I wouldn't have this baby. Like I wouldn't have these children. And that's, you know, it's hindsight, right? Like it's so easy to look backwards and be like, all the shit I went through was worth it because I have you. And at the time,
you're
it
like,
feels
like I would rather have you and not have gone through all the shit.
I would have loved the other babies, you know? I would have loved all the versions of my life,
You know? Right? Like you, I can remember Andrew was like, don't go off birth control before our honeymoon because like you'll probably immediately get pregnant. And we laugh all the time about that because I'm like.
Yes. I know the amount of like concern
I had. Panics I had because I like missed a pill and I'm like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? I'm like, girl, you don't have a period and your uterus doesn't work. Like you are fine.
Girl, you will be fine. Yeah.
The amount of time that, and we had unexplained infertility. Like there
which
was no
terrifying.
Rhyme
then. Yeah. Which is terrifying.
Like,
yeah.
Which if you do all the tests, they're like, I don't know. It all looks good. And I'm like,
that's how we were. And Lauren, I also met my husband young. So we met when I was 18 and, I think I had my first miscarriage when I was 23 maybe. And so it was the same thing. I was like, I am young. Like you're telling me this is what my body's supposed to do. And it's not doing it right. Like, what do you mean? Can't get pregnant. This doesn't make a damn bit of sense.
None of it makes sense. Crazy.
It's crazy.
It's like, funny, Lauren, it was really fun to explore, even though it was really sad, because Nicole feels crazy and people are acting like she's crazy. And she is crazy. But it's like, but of course she's crazy.
Of course.
Because everyone else is just getting it.
Yeah.
And she's like, where's mine? You know? And like, and why isn't this alarming to you that it's not working? And I think that's how a lot of us
describe it is going through infertility is a lot of hurry up and wait, right? Like it's so much hurry up and wait. And for somebody like, I am not a patient person. Like nobody would classify me as somebody with patience ever. And I mean, I've developed more patience as I've gone through infertility, had children, you know, had to be patient. Otherwise you'll throw yourself off a building every day. But it is so much just wait. It's like, oh, your lining's not good this month. We'll try again. And you're like,
next month. And you're like, but this month, like, it had to be tomorrow.
This month,
like,
this is a whole ass month that I have to wait.
Or you have to wait another month. Like, I've already waited 4 years. No. You know?
When you're trying to plan a vacation, it's like, oh, but I might be pregnant.
Right.
Oh, but we can't do that.
That's why I didn't leave my job. I was like, well, I'm going to be a mom in 9 months. And that's what I said every month. So I was like, so I can't start my career over. And all of a sudden I'm like, well, now you've been at this shit job for 7 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you're 9 months away from motherhood.
Yes.
And it makes you crazy.
Yeah.
Infertility should really come with like free therapy. Like if you're paying for all of this, it should really come with free therapy. By the way, we've inadvertently covered like a lot of our questions that I had. Yeah. So I don't want you to think we're not.
Because I'm like,
we've been talking about the question.
Well,
and I want to talk a little bit about like you've spoken as to a lot of the questions what you've talked to just as to why you felt like this was important to tackle and all of that. Did you have any hesitations about tackling this, or was it really just like this is the way that I need to process through some of the things that I've been through?
So the chief hesitation that I had didn't come till later. And it was that because I wrote the book, like, not in, like, I wrote the book in a vacuum. I wrote the book for me. I, like, the concept of the book was, like, this is a love story about a woman who's, like, going through hell. And, like, she's finding mm-hmm. her way back to this man. So I see The Best Worst Thing as a love story first.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and, like, the infertility is just, like, what Nicole is going through or on mm-hmm. her way out of when the story opens. So, like, to me, it is her and Logan's love story. And she's a woman who's having, you know, who's trying to get pregnant via surrogate, whose husband turns out to be a piece of shit. And yeah. so she is.
We all know that.
To become a mother. Yeah. She, and that's, like, that's on the back, not a spoiler. So, like, within the first couple dozen pages, like, that is what's going to happen. Like, Nick's husband's having an affair. Yeah. Like, yeah, the embryo transfer. Yeah.
Lauren DMs, somebody that I follow posted about, like, they had an arc of her book. And I, like, saw the arc and I was like, oh, okay. And then I read about it and I was like, oh, I want to read this. And just slid into Lauren's DMs and I was like, I want to read your book and I want to have you on the podcast.
Yeah.
Having not even read your book yet, I just, like, feel like I want to. And yes.
Now here we are. Here we are. Here in Italy. But it's the question is like, oh, it's not hot. And so, and it kind of comes, like, came closer when I start trying to find, like, a literary agent for the book. And it like wasn't as I thought it. I'm like, well, the book's excellent, so it's gonna be fine, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's unique, so it's gonna be fine. And it's like, well, it's not like the others, and mm-hmm. that makes it a risk, right? Like, mm-hmm. it makes it a commercial risk, to be like, oh, this is kind of not like unsavory, but it's just like, it's not something that we normally see, like, in a romance novel, especially the kind of, like, on a graphic level. And I tried to just be, like, as honest as I could. And so what comes out is what comes out. And I think, like, I still have that concern, which is, like, and it's back to Elsie Silver, which is that, like, once you're in the book, if you don't like the book, once you're in the book, like, don't like the book. My fear has always been that people will not pick up the book because they're like, I don't want to read about this thing. And I think, and that is why I'm always like, but you want to talk about it at dinner? Like, so are you sure you don't want to read about it? Or is it just kind of like, right? Like,
and listening this goes both ways. If you've been through infertility and you're worried about it triggering you, or you're going through infertility, or even if you haven't and you just are like, oh, I don't know, like, sounds really sad. Like, as with a lot of things, like, there are moments that are sad. There are also moments that are super hot, and there are moments, and it's just like, I don't know. I feel like it should almost be like required reading because everybody knows somebody who has gone through.
It's like an empathy tool, right? You're like, hey, this is why your friend is crazy. This is why she didn't come to your baby shower. Yeah.
There you go. Like, maybe this will help you understand. Yeah.
I do think that people, like, I'm trying to think of the right word. Like, it is really hard to go through this, right? But it's harder to feel alone in it. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to have gone through it to be empathetic and to be understanding and to be a good friend to somebody. Just like, if you have a friend who, God forbid, has a loved one that passes away, you don't have to have had the exact same loved one pass away to be an empathetic friend to them, right? And I think people, you know, infertility is tricky because it's like, if somebody dies, you, like, bring food, right? You bring food, or you bring a plant, or you show up at a funeral. With infertility, people are like, I don't know how to help you. And it's like, just be there. That's it. Like,
and I think,
but don't isolate yourself from them because you don't know how to be there, because, like, I, like, the hardest part is feeling alone.
Yeah.
Like, hands down, the hardest part of it, other than, you know, the your body rejecting what you want it to do, it's being alone in it is fucking hard. And it's like, my parents were like, I don't know how to help. Like, I don't know what you need. Like, you know, Andrew's family is like, why are you not at the baby shower? That's so rude. And I'm like,
right.
You do not
understand. Because I will cry and it will be worse.
Yeah. Because I'm like, you do not want me at the baby shower, okay?
This isn't about, I was like, because I don't want to make it about me.
Yeah.
And you,
like, I was like, because this should be a special time for her. And it's, like, going to feel like somebody is slowly slicing me with razor blades if I'm there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but like, Lauren, I said, it'd be required reading. So
we talk kind of along the same lines. We talk a lot about book to TV or movie adaptations, and ones we like, ones we wish had been done differently, etc. Do you think that you would ever, first of all, would you ever want the best worst thing adapted?
Yes.
I know. I feel like that's an obvious yes. But would you want it to be...
No, it's so private. I'll keep it to myself. I don't know.
But would you want it to be a TV show or a movie?
So I think it's a TV show. I think there's not enough to... I think it's... So I always, when I think about perfect adaptations, I often think about Sally Rooney Normal People.
It's one of Neely's favorites.
Because I think the 10 episode structure...
Normal People is so good.
Yeah. And it like, and it is so raw and it like, it matches the book really nicely. So I'm like, I'm very excited for Yulene's adaptation of People We Meet on Vacation.
I cannot.
So excited, but there are going to be things that had to go.
Yes.
Like to get the story into 100 minutes. And I understand that. And I think probably it's going to be done well in this particular book, the one I happen to write. I think that a lot that it is, like, even the dual timeline stuff, like when we get to go back in time and see Nicole, like at 28 or whatever, and the way she interacts with Logan before she decides to have this baby with her husband or whatever, like the build of that and the way that that ultimately intersects with like the demise of her marriage and the things that she learns about her body are like, that is the book, right? Where like that, it is the title of the book. Like it is like all of these things coming together to create this sort of best worst thing, like this perfect storm that uproots her life and pushes her in this direction that she never had the balls to go in had her husband not set it all on fire for her. Mm-hmm. Right. And mm-hmm. I think it, like this chain of events, like this invisible string that brings her to him and to this new adventure, is like so dependent on these like these tiny little moments. And while I would take a movie, I feel like the story is better when we sit with them like as characters, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're so like they are such a slow burn. Like Jim and Pam is better because it takes longer. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the story is there because I think if you took the romance out of this book, there's still a story to be told. Mm-hmm. It's just not the one that I want to read or write. And we kind of have two things going on. And there's a big cast. Like she's got three women in her life who will play like huge parts in her arc, you know, and she's got this shit with her husband and they got to yell at each other. And I don't want to cut any of those. Like, yeah, have people screaming at me is my passion.
Mm-hmm. It's my passion. We talk about adaptations a lot. We've done several episodes on adaptations and we talk about it with every author we have on. And Rachel and I are most like, at least me, I think the best adaptations I've seen have been TV. And that's mm-hmm. not to say that there are not good movie adaptations, because there absolutely are. I mean, we've talked about many of them, but I often use Normal People as an example when I'm talking about adaptations, because it's the best one I've ever seen done. Yeah. And
the pacing matches the book.
The pacing matches the book. Yeah. And you need all of those episodes. Like, you need to see that whole chain of events and everything they go through together and apart.
Oh my God. Sometimes you just need to watch episode two where they just bang the whole time.
You just need end of episode
like the three. Montage, they're like in the car in Ireland, and you're like, this is
maybe that's what I'll watch this weekend.
That is
maybe. Yeah. Who knows? But just that episode.
I can remember that had to have come out when one of my children was an infant. Because I can vividly remember watching it on my phone feeding a baby.
Like, yeah.
I vividly remember doing this. And or you can watch the end of episode three if you want to have a good cry, where he calls her after the Debs when he's a little bit drunk and he cries on her voicemail. That's also a solid one to watch. Listen, Rachel, you could not handle Normal
excellent.
People.
It's just excellent. And she's so excellent.
Yeah. Rachel's not well with sad things.
Yeah. I would be fine. It would be fine.
Yeah. You know, yeah, I feel that. There's definitely some book throwing for me with Normal People.
Yeah, with Normal People.
Like,
oh, and God, the show like, is, to me, the show is better than the book. 100%.
Oh, okay. So I read.
Lauren's like, oh, okay.
I feel like they are like together. Like you read the book and then the show is like the gift you get for reading the book. That is my professional
I read the book so long before I watched the show. And I never read it. And but I have watched the show like probably 7 times at this point because it's like comfort to me, even though that's like very sick and twisted because it's like a lot. It's not like Gilmore Girls, okay, or Friends.
It's a different kind of comfort, all right?
Yeah, it's not like a safe... Sally Rooney is not a romance novelist. No. Like, you are not safe in her books. But she can write a soulmate. Like,
and she does.
Yeah, do you, and the dialogue in that book, like, the way they are connected is so gorgeous. So,
yeah.
Sally what? Rooney. If you're watching, Sally.
Sally, we would love to have
Sorry, Sally. if you're listening.
Sally, slide into my DMs. What is advice you have for aspiring authors?
I think that you need to be honest. I think it is, and this is like not tooting my own horn. These are the facts. Mm-hmm. It is nearly impossible to sell a book right now. Like, everyone is struggling to sell books, including successful authors. The market is inundated with talent. The rise of like legitimate, wonderful books in the indie marketplace is making it harder. There are unlimited people with talent and vision and good hooks for marketing. And there are you could just read forever and not run out of great love stories right now. Yeah. That is the market. What's that?
I said, I want to never run out of books to read.
You won't. And that
is
amazing. But if you, whether you wish to write a book for yourself or you wish to traditionally publish your book through like a big old publisher, or you want to put it on Amazon and run your own business. And those are all like equally fantastic outlets. I think you may need to like think about what is best for the type of story you're writing, but like they all work no matter what you do. Like, this process is like too long. Like, actually, like, we don't need another Emily Henry. Like, you don't need to make that. Like, if she's doing it, other people are writing books like that. Like, it doesn't need to be done. Like, I think you need to bring to the table who you are and be true to your voice. Like, I think the reason I was able to move my book through the system is the same reason I was afraid, right? Where I was like, oh, I'm bringing something different to the marketplace, and so the market won't have me. But also, if most people are bringing, you know, like, if you bring yourself to the marketplace and you write the book that only you can write, and this is, I mean, particularly true in your debut, then, like, and you give it the absolute best shot that you can, and that means, like, turning off your Wi-Fi and, like, dedicating yourself to your story and whatever pockets of time you have, like, that is my advice, because then you have created something, like, kind of only yours. Right. And so I once had a snob tell me that he picked books. He was only interested in books that changed the way he saw the world. And this was his way of dismissing romance. He wants to learn something new about the world through a book.
And you can't do that in romance.
Which can only be done through literary fiction.
Right.
And I was just like, well, fuck you. Mm-hmm. Watch me.
Yeah.
Like, watch me tell a love story that changes the way. Mm-hmm. You see the world, you know? Mm-hmm. And so now, like, that is, and I think that if you are true to, like, yourself, and you're over the age of 30, this is huge, because this requires, like, life experience, something has happened to you that has changed the way you saw the world, and if you're comfortable, that is a good place to start.
Yeah.
Right? Like, leveraging the thing, which is, like, oh, like, when I made peace with my body, and I'm not done. I got a dead mom.
Yeah.
You know, I stopped drinking.
I got a whole closet of skeletons.
You sort of got it. Like, I got it. Yes. Yeah. And it's like
this is Lauren's trauma.
I told my editor on my call, I was like, I got at least 4 big ones.
Yeah.
And I'm only 35.
Yeah.
And it's like using that stuff to your advantage. And if you're not comfortable, you're not comfortable. Or use a pen.
And I think there's so many ways to do that too, because if it's Elsie Silver, right? Like, I think that I have read brilliant rom-coms that make me change the way that I think about things. Like, you can add in life experiences, and it can be still done with, like, levity and stuff. And you think about even, like, other media that you consume that has had such a huge impact and is not a drama, right? Bullshit.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, this is what they say to make the genre small because it makes them uncomfortable because it raises the bar for men.
Right.
And, like, that's the truth. Like, because
that
women
is the whole reason that we started this podcast.
Yes. Yeah.
Essentially is
that
we want to a place where women can be lifted up and not made to feel shameful for the types of books they read or the types of books they write or any of the content they consume, because you learn something from every experience and every TV show you watch, every TikTok you watch, every everything. You are constantly learning. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, I feel like it's, we talked about this with Emily Giffen when we had her on, where it's like chick lit was like this whole, you know, there was like a big chick lit movement in the early 2000s. And it's like that name alone is so degrading that it's stupid. Like, we don't
start to take it back, right? Which is like why we called the podcast Welcome to the Smut Show, where people will be like, oh, that's smut. And we're like, yes.
No, yeah.
Let's take that name back. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to take it back because it's like, well, it all comes back to being like women's pleasure is not important, or it's unseemly, or like it's not, or like there are too many women in one room enjoying themselves without men, and that is weird, right? Like, and you know, like when, like
what
like
would we do without men, you know, like
and it's like other than these fictional ones that we've created, but it's like, oh, like this is like, I can't imagine writing books where there's not like a massive love story, because this is people at their most vulnerable. And I think like, I think like that is like, when I think about writing or like what I'm doing in this genre, you know, cause I could go write a mystery. I could write literary fiction. It's like, I could just, you know, I could, it's like, oh, I'm just really interested in watching somebody be like cracked open. And like, why wouldn't I do that? Like through love. Do you know what I mean?
Like, and yeah, like them being loved in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. So. Okay. The last question we always ask anybody that comes on the podcast is, what is a have to read book that you are always telling people about?
Okay. So I've got a few.
That's fine. You can give us multiple.
Okay. Regina Black's August Lane is so good. So.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm reading that right now, and she's like, she's a remarkable writer. And she is writing like a gritty, complicated romance. Mm. And I just welcome all of them. Like, I hope it floods the market. I hope that gritty flawed romances are the new like paranormal romance. Like, you know what I mean? Like, let's go. The new romanticism is bad people.
There you go.
Let's do it. Hard women. You know what I mean? Flawed men.
Yeah.
Great. Katie Naiman is a great friend of mine, and I will suggest You Between the Lines to anyone who listens. It is a love story about like two like rival people in an MFA program, and they're like, they're writing poems at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And she is an MFA. She's an MFA in poetry. So the poetry is excellent. And it's like used to like flirt. And she's just, she is funny and she is talented. And I think the
Rachel
book.
And I are both like, hold on, adding to
Well, cover. I feel like
it's
I've
a
seen
great
this.
Time.
Yeah, I've seen this. It's, cover for
like,
sure.
And she had a very good debut year. And I just read her new one. So the book is like, it's in the ether, it's at your Barnes and Noble.
Katie Naiman.
Katie Naiman, she's a fantastic writer, and it's a very cool story.
Love that.
And I love that. And then what else am I reading? I'm really excited. I haven't read it yet. But like the arc I'm most excited for is I went to dinner with this woman, Natalie. She's like an LA author, and I'm in LA and there's a lot of writers here, and I try once a month to make plans with someone. And go meet them and like make the property taxes that I pay in this town make sense by like having peers. And I went to dinner with Natalie, and she sold her book, which is like a very messy speculative romance called, now I don't remember, Every Version of You. And she was like a Reese's Lit Up finalist and like Reese Witherspoon's little like incubator program. And it's a mess of a book, and I'm getting a physical arc of it from her at my book launch. She's going to be one for me, and I'm super, super excited. The book is like a very splashy deal, like sold all over the world. And she is just like a delightful, like human, like when I met her and I was like, I went already to be jealous. Cause like, there's still like the corporate girl in me from my 20s mm-hmm. who's like, F anyone who's had more success than I have. And I met her and she was just a fantastic person mm-hmm. and so interesting. And we talked about craft for like 3 hours and I cannot wait to read her book. And I think people should be reading it. So those are my three. So that arc is on NetGalley. So you can shoot your shot. Her name is Natalie Messier. And that's what I'm reading.
I love it.
And I'm reading, and yeah, those are my big three, I think.
Those are your big three. I love it so much.
Well, I love that. I just literally ordered one with one click on Amazon.
Yeah, there you go.
Note of the others. Okay, so our last thing we do is we do kind of like a rapid fire this or that. It's just four little questions. We're going to give you an either or and just boom, first answer. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I'm ready.
Rachel, do you want to start?
Just say a word.
Oh, no. So we'll tell you. We'll tell you, and then you tell us which one. So I'm going to give you two options.
Okay.
So beach or mountains?
Mountains? Surprise myself. Live in a beach town.
And you're like, wow.
Maybe I'm just tired.
Yeah.
Wine. Okay. I'm a non-drinker. Diet Coke.
Okay, that's a perfect answer. Fine. Yeah.
Thank you. You're like, no, you have to drink.
No, you don't. My husband's sober. We stand some Diet Coke around this house or like a non-alcoholic beer. We call it near beer.
Yeah.
Okay. Planning out a vacation or like a spontaneous surprise trip?
Okay. Spontaneous surprise trip, but one city.
Okay. Which city is it going to be?
That way you can be slow.
Yeah. If you had to pick one city right now, what would it be?
Where would you go?
Right now? Mm-hmm. October? September? I kind of want to go to New York, which is not interesting in this free hypothetical trip. But I'm just like, let's go to New York. Let's do it.
So, okay, yeah. That works. We'll allow it.
All right. And the last one we always do is a pick your praise. So she's like, I'm ready. Good girl or look at me?
I think look at me because if my husband good girled me in bed, I would just.
So, okay, you have, like,
But, like, love is legitimately hot in every context.
Thank you. Right? Thank you.
It's like, okay. Whereas Good Girl's hot in some contexts, but, like, it may end in me just laughing in your face. So, that would need to be, you know.
That sounds about right.
So,
yeah.
Yes. That's so valid.
It's safe. Look at me as safe. Good Girl is, like.
Depends.
A risk.
Depends.
Yeah.
A risk, which is hot. We love a man who takes risks.
We do. Okay, yeah. Lauren, whore yourself out. Where can people find you?
Online or in general?
Online would be preferable.
I'm like, here's my location.
Yeah, I would rather you tell us online.
I'm chronically online on Instagram at Lauren Oakey Author. And hopefully my book is in your bookstore. And if it's not, you could request it.
You can. You can ask them.
Or order it online. So that is where I'm not hard to find. Quick Google will bring you to me.
To DMs.
I'm not a cool person. Phone in hand. Whenever someone's like, thanks for getting back to me. I was like, no problem. My phone was in
no problem.
Hand.
I was literally looking at my
no
phone
problem.
At that moment.
Literally me. Yeah. So, like, you're such a fast responder. I'm like, I'm
I know.
Scared.
My publisher was like, God, your marketing has been so funny. And I was like, thanks. I'm chronically online. Like it is
just online always.
Very natural to me.
Yeah.
So
Relates. Okay. Well, you can find the podcast everywhere at Smut Show Podcast. And you can find me everywhere at Rachel_M. Lewis. And you can find Neely everywhere.
You can find me everywhere at Neelykins except TikTok where I'm Neely Moldovan because TikTok.
Yeah.
And guys, we will talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.